Reading tonight will be from the book of Esther, chapter 5, verses 13 through 17. Oh, 4. Yeah, sorry, 4. Then Mordecai commanded the answer, Esther, think not of thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. For if thou altogether holdest the peace at this time, then shall there enlarge and deliver arise to the Jews from another place. But through the father's house shall be destroyed. But thou father's house shall be destroyed. And who knoweth whether that thou art to come to the kingdom for such of this time as this time? Then Esther bade them return Mordecai this answer. And go gather together all the Jews at the presence of Shushan, and fast ye for me. And neither eat or drink 3 days, night or day, and I also, my maidens, will fast likewise. And so will I go into the king, which is not according to the law. And if I perish, I perish. So Mordecai went to went his way and did according to all that Esther had commanded him.
One of the greatest blessings in my life is to have the opportunity to associate with people that are interested in spiritual things. It's good to be with you, but the specific reference that I have in mind is an older lady whose name was Florence Patterson. Some of you remember her. She obeyed the gospel when she was about 87 years old. Sister Patterson had not read the Bible. She began to study and to learn and grasp and obey. One of the thoughts that she had as we studied together is that she did not know what the books of the Bible were really about, just a summation of the various books of the Bible. Now, considering that she was 87 years old, how much time do we have? Well, don't know. But I knew that we didn't have years. And so as we began to set forth what the books of the Bible are about, just a summation of the books, we came to the book of Esther. And rather than to simply read the text, which I would encourage you to do, I just started to relate the story of Esther. And one, the fascination of her interest was moving. Because as we would come to certain places in the book of Esther, she would then say, "And then what happened? And then what happened?" As if she was sitting on the edge of her seat, so excited about the things that she was learning. I said that in a lot of places about Sister Patterson. And the book of Esther is just that way. It's an exciting book. We're studying about the providence of God. And I don't know of any book, as far as its entirety is concerned, that helps us to understand the providence of God any more than the book of Esther. The time frame in which we're studying is the time frame following the Babylonian captivity when the Persian kings come into power and the Babylonian Empire falls. And in this text, it tells us, beginning in verse 1 of chapter 1, "Now it came to pass in the days of Ahasuerus," this Ahasuerus who reigned from India even unto Ethiopia, "over 127, that is over 127 provinces." Let's pause just there. We need to identify this man. King Ahasuerus is called Xerxes by the Greeks. In fact, some translations might record his name as Xerxes. We want to note that his empire is made up of 127 provinces, the text tells us, from India to Ethiopia. Now, you can look on a map or a globe and see the grandeur of his empire. But we want to note that in this first chapter, that Xerxes, or Ahasuerus, is giving a feast that lasts 128 days. And it's to be celebrated throughout his empire. But in Shushan, where the palace is. He's called to gather all kinds of nobles and high-ranking individuals, and they're to celebrate with the king. Now, during this process, this was the third year of the reign of Ahasuerus, that he calls these folks together into the royal palace to celebrate this feast. And you'll note that his guests drank the royal wine with golden cups. It was a fabulous occasion. And during this time, as they drink in abundance and their hearts are merry, we might say they were drunk, the king tells us, or commands, that Vashti, the queen, be brought before him to show the peoples, this is verse 11, and the princes her beauty, for she was fair to look upon. But the queen, Vashti, refused to come at the king's command by the chamberlains. Therefore was the king very wroth, and his anger burned in him. Now there are a number of things that we want to take home with us, at least from this text. When Vashti is ordered to show her beauty before the king, some have declared, in fact it's my opinion, that Vashti in her modesty refused to show herself in the way that the king desired that she do before all these drunken guests. Some have suggested that what got her into trouble was she had rejected the commandment of the king, and so consequently she had disobeyed the king, disobeying God. She had not fulfilled her role as a woman or as a king in this respect. I prefer to believe that she was modest in her attitude and so forth, and refused to display her beauty in the way that the king desired before all these drunken guests. But the question then was, because she has refused to come at the king's command, what are we going to do to the queen? In verse 15, what shall we do unto the queen Vashti according to the law, because she hath done or not done the bidding of the king Ahasuerus by the chamberlains? And then we find that the expression is, she's not only done us wrong or done you wrong, Mr. King, but she's done us all wrong, because if folks begin to hear about Vashti, that she did not submit to the commandment of the king, then what are our wives going to do? And all the women throughout the kingdom, what are they going to do? So there's going to be a revolution, as it were, or rebellion take place among the women folks. Well, not so. Not so. But in order to accommodate, we know in verse 19, in the latter part of that verse, it says that Vashti come no more before King Ahasuerus. Let the king give her royal estate unto another that is better than she. And when the king's decree which he had made, or which he shall make, shall be published throughout all his kingdom, for it is great, all the wives will give to their husbands honor, both to great and small. And the saying pleased the king and the princess, and the king did according to the word of Memucan. Now, when we look at this passage, we see that some of these fellows that have come in from various places, what real position do they have to help in this decision? But nonetheless, the king listens to what they have to say. But I want to drop down in the text just a little bit. The ruling is that we're going to replace Vashti. She's not going to be queen anymore. In chapter 2, it tells us, beginning in verse 1, after these things, when the wrath of King Ahasuerus was pacified, he remembered Vashti and what she had done, and what his decree, or what was decreed against her. And then in the bigger portion of chapter 2, we find that the king orders, I want a new queen. So bring all the beautiful women that you would desire before me, and I'll select a new queen. Well, we know, picking up the reading, beginning at verse 5, it says, there was a certain Jew in Shushan, the palace, whose name was Mordecai, the son of Jair, the son of Shemaiah, the son of Kish, a Benjamite, who had been carried away from Jerusalem with the captives that had been carried away with Jeconiah, the king of Judah, whom Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, had carried away. Now that sets the time frame for us. Those of you who are in our history and geography study Perhaps you remember this time frame when the king of Babylon had carried away Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego, and Daniel, and Ezekiel, and certain characters such as this that we're familiar with. Well, Mordecai was one of those captives. And Mordecai was either the uncle or the cousin. It depends on your sources of information. We know that according to the Latin Vulgate, the text tells us that Mordecai was the uncle of Esther. Josephus seems to think that she was, or that he was her uncle. But the text here tells us that she was his uncle's daughter, which would make her a cousin. But be that as it may, it doesn't affect the point that we're trying to establish. We note in that same verse, in verse 7, she was fair and beautiful. And when her father and mother were dead, Mordecai took her for his own daughter. Now, I want you to underscore in your thinking who this woman is. She is related to Mordecai. Mordecai has, for the most part, been a father to her. When her parents died, he took her in and raised her as his own daughter. As we continue in this text, we know that in verses 8 and following, that Esther does not reveal who she is. She doesn't make it known that she is, in fact, a Jew. But what we do see is that after a period of time, she is selected to be the queen. And in verse 20 of this text, we know again Esther had not yet made known her kindred nor her people as Mordecai had charged her. Again, underscore that in your thinking. Esther did as the commandment of Mordecai, like as when she was brought up with him. Now again, she's been somewhat like his daughter, and she's following his instruction. She does not make known that she is a Jew, though she has now become the queen of the Persian Empire. As we drop down further in the text, we read about Mordecai. Mordecai was keeping the king's gate. And when he learned that two of the king's chamberlains had made a plot to kill the king, Mordecai revealed that to Esther, and Esther told the king in Mordecai's name. Now again, something you want to write down if you're keeping notes. Verse 23, and when inquisition was made of the matter, and it was found to be so, they were both hanged on a tree, and it was written in the book of the Chronicles before the king. Now what's Mordecai done? He saved the king. And it's been recorded in the Chronicles of the king. We'll come back to that when we get just a little further along in the reading. But in verse 1 of chapter 3, it says, after these things, King Ahasuerus promoted Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agite, and advanced him and set his seat above the princes that were with him. Now, we've got some major characters just here, and I want to get a little further along in our charts as we underscore those the way I've introduced this. I've got this one in the wrong place. But I do want to note just here who Haman is. Haman has reached a place of great importance. We might refer to Haman as the second place man in all of the kingdom. We might refer to him as being in a premier position or the prime minister of the Persian Empire. So he has a place of great position. But as he goes in and out of the gate where Mordecai is, Mordecai does not give him any regard or any respect. In fact, if you'll notice in verse 4, it says, it came to pass when they spake daily unto him, and he hearkened unto them, that they told Haman to see whether Mordecai's matters would stand, for he had told them that he was a Jew. And when Haman saw that Mordecai bowed not down, nor did him reverence, then was Haman full of wrath, but he thought scorn to lay hands on Mordecai alone, for they had made known to him the people of Mordecai. Wherefore Haman sought to destroy all the Jews that were throughout the whole kingdom of Ahasuerus, even the people of Mordecai. Now that's very important to our study. Haman, the prime minister, the right-hand man of the king of Persia, hates Mordecai because Mordecai doesn't bow down to him when he goes in and out through the gate. And rather than just to kill Mordecai, that's not satisfying enough. He's found out that Mordecai is a Jew. And so Haman's desire is to kill all of them, just to wipe out the whole nation of the Jews. Did I say Mordecai's plan? Haman's plan is to kill all of the Jews. Now, he implements that plan. In verse 8, it says, "And Haman said unto King Ahasuerus, there is a certain people scattered abroad and dispersed among the peoples in all the provinces of thy kingdom, and their laws are diverse from those of every people. Neither keep they the king's law. Therefore, it is not for the king's profit to suffer them." Now, I want to call your attention to something just here. We've noted that it was the practice of the Assyrian Empire, when they conquered a people, to take them and scatter them around throughout the kingdom among others that they've conquered. That was not the overall practice of the Babylonians, yet to some degree they practiced that. And when you consider what the Assyrians did and what the Babylonians have done, and now we have the Persians who have conquered the Babylonians, where are the people of God? Where are the Jews? Where they're scattered out all over the kingdom of Persia. And Haman knows that. You see, we're not talking about just one given locality where the Jews are camped. They're scattered out throughout the empire. And it's Haman's desire, kill all of them. But we know that the king, in verse 10, took his ring from his hand and gave it to Haman, the son of Hammedatha, the Agite, the Jews' enemy. And the king said unto Haman, "The silver is given to thee, the people also, to do with them as it seemeth good to thee." Now they write this thing down, and once it's written down by the king, signed with his seal, it cannot be changed. Now that was the law that they had. Now picking up the reading in verse 13, we see the decree. "The letters were sent by post into all the king's provinces, to destroy, to slay, and to cause to perish all Jews, both young and old, little children and women, in one day, even upon the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month Adar, and to take the spoil of them for a prey." Now, I suppose that it would be just all but impossible for such a decree to be spread throughout the kingdom and the Jews know nothing of it. They found out exactly what was the decree of the king, and we know in chapter 4, beginning in verse 1, it says, "Now when Mordecai knew all that was done, Mordecai rent his clothes and put on sackcloth with ashes and went out into the midst of the city and cried with a loud and bitter cry. And he came even before the king's gate, for none might enter within the king's gate clothed with sackcloth. And in every province, whithersoever the king's commandment and his decree came, there was great mourning among the Jews, and fasting, and weeping, and wailing, and many lay in sackcloth and ashes." Now picture this, we're talking about the whole nation of the Jews, scattered out throughout the empire of the Persians. And this decree is, kill them all on the same day. Now once the decree had been set, it was set in stone. Could not be changed. Now, what are we going to do? What were they going to do? Well, we'll note in verse 8, it tells us that Mordecai informed Esther, the queen, of the decree of the king. In verse 8, also, he gave him a copy of the writing of the decree that was given out in Shushan to destroy them, to show it unto Esther and to declare it unto her, and to charge her that she should go in unto the king to make supplication unto him and to make request before him for her people. Now you see why, don't you? She is a Jew, though the king does not know that. She is in a position of royalty. If there's anybody that can do anything to save the Jews, then it would be Esther. Pick up the reading in verse 11. "For there it says, all the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces do know that whosoever, whether man or woman, shall come in unto the king and to the inner court, who is not called, there is one law for him, that he be put to death, except those to whom the king shall hold out the golden scepter, that he may live. But I have not been called to come in unto the king these 30 days. Now, Esther understands the rules. If somebody comes in before the king that has not been sent for, then the right of life or death is in the hand of the king, even if it be the queen. Esther knows that. And she's not been sent for. So what is it that Mordecai is asking her to do? Mordecai is essentially asking her to put her life on the line. Do you see that? You go in before the king. Here's what can happen, Esther says. I can be killed. Now here's where our text comes into play. In verses 13 and 14. Then Mordecai bade them return answer unto Esther, Think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. Now remember, Esther was a Jew too. And with this decree being played out, Esther's not going to escape simply because she's in the king's house. Mordecai continues, For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then will relief and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place, but thou and thy father's house will perish. Now let's pause just here once again. Here's the point of our lesson. The confidence that Mordecai has in the plan of God to exercise His providence to carry out that plan, even though this decree is in place to kill all of the Jews. Now, why is that important to us? Well, we know that God had promised in Genesis chapter 49 and in verse 10 that the scepter would not depart out of the hand of Judah. Judah was a tribe of the Jews. Keep in mind, if you would please, that when God spake to Abraham previous to that in Genesis chapter 12, He said, In thy seed shall all families of the earth be blessed. And at the time, we find that God had made that promise to Abraham. He didn't have any children. But now He has a multitude. And now here's the decree, kill them all. Now what does Mordecai believe? Esther, if you don't approach the king on behalf of the Jews, then God will find another way to spare them. The whole nation of the Jews is not going to be wiped out. Mordecai has confidence that God will, in His providence, carry out His plan. Now, I want us to look at the position that Esther is in. That is, the choices that are put before her. Number one, there's the possibility of losing her life for the life or lives of her people. That's very much a reality. Secondly, the king, later we see, when she calls the king to a banquet to make a request of him, he says, I'll give you up to half of my kingdom. Now, in that position, you see two very powerful motivators. Life. You want to live, don't you? But what we also notice in this is that she has offered to her half the king's riches. What often becomes a hindrance to anybody? Money. Our attitude toward it. Now here Esther has the privilege of living, and she can be made wealthy up to half of the king's kingdom. Is she going to risk all that to do what Mordecai asked her to do, to save her people? Well, as we read in this text, a second thing that I want us to see is that Mordecai tells her, if you choose not to do this, then God will find a way to save His people. But who knows whether or not you're come to the kingdom for such a time as this? Now, that's a very interesting question. Who knows whether or not God has brought you to this place for this very purpose to spare these people because you have the authority to go before the king. You can do that. Now, as you look further in this text, in verse 15, well, let's pick up the reading at verse 16. Esther now is answering Mordecai's instructions. And she says, Go gather together all the Jews that are present in Shushan, and fast ye for me, and neither eat nor drink 3 days, night or day. And I also and my maidens will fast in like manner, and so will I go unto the king, which is not according to the law. I've not been sent for. I very well may be killed. But she said, if I perish, I perish. Now, that raises an interesting proposition. Would you have the will to do what Esther did, or the confidence that Mordecai did? In our study of the providence of God, there's some reminders that we've looked at periodically, and we want to keep these in the back of our mind. In Ecclesiastes 9, verse 1, the writer said, for all this I laid to my heart, even to explore all this, that the righteous and the wise and their works are in the hand of God. Don't forget that. God takes care of things. And that's what Mordecai expresses in this passage, confidence in God. In Ecclesiastes chapter 3, the passage tells us, man cannot find out the work that God hath done from the beginning, even unto the end. Now, though Mordecai did not understand precisely how God was going to spare the nation of the Jews, he knew that somehow God would provide. Ecclesiastes chapter 3 tells us, you don't know everything that God does. And in Deuteronomy chapter 29, in verse 29, we learn that the things that are revealed belong to us. The secret things belong to God. Now, what do we do? We read what God has to say, and we do what God says, even when I may not understand all the ins and the outs of it. We walk by faith, not by sight. That is, because God said, do it. I believe what God said. Now, isn't that the expression of Mordecai? I believe what God said, that through the seed of Abraham, he will bless all families of the earth. The lineage from Abraham will not end. I believe what God said. Now that's the expression of Mordecai. The wisdom writer said in Proverbs 3, trust in Jehovah with all thy heart, and lean not upon thine own understanding. In all thy ways acknowledge him, and he will direct thy paths. Now sometimes, because I can't see the end from the beginning, I don't want to start. Now that was not the case with Mordecai. That was not the case with Esther. I believe what God said. I trust him, and so it will be. God will provide. Now, I want to pass beyond some of these because we've already talked about a good bit of this. And I want to get into the point of our study. We've talked about the place that Haman had. We've talked about the decree, the king's decree. We've talked about Esther's commitment unto Mordecai. Now I want to talk with you about this plan that Esther has laid out, how she's going to reveal her desire to the king to spare all the Jews. That brings us to chapter 5. In chapter 5, begin reading, if you would, in verse 2. There it tells us it was so, when the king saw Esther the queen standing in the court, that she obtained favor in his sight, and the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. Now what's that mean? Though she was not sent for, she would not die. She was granted permission to approach the king. And it tells us, so Esther drew nigh and touched the top of the scepter, and the king said unto her, what wilt thou, Queen Esther? What is thy request? It shall be given thee even unto half the kingdom. Now it's interesting to note that that was repeated a number of times. It'll be given to you up to half of the kingdom. What is your request? Well, in verse 5, the king said, verse 4, it tells us, and Esther said, if it seem good unto the king, let the king and Haman come this day unto the banquet that I have prepared for him. Now that proves to be kind of an exciting occasion too. Who gets to go with the king? Haman, the prime minister, the right-hand man of the king, is invited by the queen to come to a banquet. Now strangely enough, they come to the banquet. And the king in verse 6 said unto Esther, at the banquet of wine, what is thy petition? And it shall be granted thee, and what is thy request? Even to half of the kingdom. It shall be performed. Well, certainly, the king knows that Esther doesn't just want to put on a banquet. There's something that she desires of the king, and his desire, what is it that you want? Up to half of the kingdom, it shall be granted. Now, beginning in verse 7, Then answered Esther and said, my petition and my request is, if I have found favor in the sight of the king, and if it please the king to grant my petition and to perform my request, let the king and Haman come to the banquet that I shall prepare for them, and I will do tomorrow as the king hath said. Now here's an invitation to another banquet. Now beginning in verse 9. We've just got to pause and note this. In verse 9, it says, then went Haman forth that day, joyful and glad of heart. But when Haman saw Mordecai in the king's gate, that he stood not up nor moved for him, he was filled with wrath against Mordecai. Nevertheless, Haman refrained himself and went home and sent and fetched his friends and Zeresh his wife. And Haman recounted unto them the glory of his riches, and the multitude of his children, and all the things wherein the king had promoted him, and how he had advanced him above all the princes and servants of the king. And Haman said, moreover, yea, Esther the queen, did let no man come in with the king unto the banquet that she hath prepared but myself. And tomorrow also I am invited by her together with the king. Now what a grand fellow I am. You can see this fellow just breaking his arm, patting himself on the back. What a fine fellow he is. Well, that comes back to get him. In verse 13, yet all this availeth me nothing so long as I see Mordecai the Jew sitting at the king's gate. You know, all the honor and the wealth and the prestige and everything that I have, it means nothing to me because Mordecai, he will not bow down. He was angry. He wants Mordecai and all the Jews dead. And then Zeresh, his wife, verse 14, and all his friends said unto him, let a gallows be made 50 cubits high. And in the morning speak thou unto the king that Mordecai may be hanged thereon. And go thou in merrily with the king unto the banquet. And the thing pleased Haman, and he caused the gallows to be made. Now I want you to look at the time frame that we're looking at here. The decree has been made by the king. And now we find that as a result of Haman's wrath for Mordecai, Mordecai says, look at all the great things I have, but it means nothing because Mordecai won't bow down to me. And his wife and his friends say, build a gallows and hang him on it. Just hang him on it. And the very next day, Mordecai is to be hanged. But some things happen first. In this text of chapter 6, beginning at verse 1, it tells us that on that night, could not the king sleep. Couldn't sleep. And he commanded to bring the book of the record of the Chronicles, and they were read before him. Now, as you read history, sometimes you might think, well, that'll put me to sleep. And so the king orders that the Chronicles be brought, and he begins to read them. And what does he read about? He reads about Mordecai. How that Mordecai had saved the king's life sometime before. And his question then is, what honor and dignity, verse 3, hath been bestowed on Mordecai for this? Well, it says, then said the king's servants that ministered unto him, there is nothing. And he said, who is in the court? Now look at the time frame. Who is in the court of the king? Now Haman was come into the outward court of the king's house. Why is it that Haman is there? Well, he's been told by his wife and friends to build this gallows, and he's done that. Now tomorrow you go before the king and ask that Mordecai be killed, that he be hanged on the gallows. Why is Haman in the king's court? He's in the king's court to ask the king that Mordecai might be hanged. Interestingly enough, it says to speak unto the king to hang Mordecai on the gallows that he prepared for him. And the king's servant said unto him, behold, Haman standeth in the court. And the king said, let him come in. Now remember who Haman is. Haman is the right-hand man, the prime minister of the king. And so he brings Haman in and asks Haman, what shall be done unto the man whom the king delighteth to honor? Now what would you think that Haman was thinking? Well, you don't have to think long, the text tells us. Now Haman said in his heart, to whom would the king delight to do honor more than to me? And Haman said to the king, For the man whom the king delighteth to honor, let royal apparel be brought which the king useth to wear. And the horse that the king rideth upon, and on the head of which the crown royal is set. And let the apparel of the horse be delivered to the hand of one of the king's most noble princes, that or the apparel, and the horse, be delivered to the noble princes, that they may array the man wherewith whom the king delighteth to honor, and cause him to ride on horseback through the street of the city, and proclaim before him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delighteth to honor. Now can you just see old Haman sitting on that horse and one of the king's servants leading him around proclaiming his greatness? You see, it would not just be that he's second in command of all of the empire. It wouldn't be that he's just gathered all this wealth and so forth together. I'll catch up there in a minute. But what we know is that Haman sees himself receiving such honor. Oh, what a turn of events. In verse 10, then the king said unto Haman, make haste, and take the apparel and the horse, as thou hast said, and do so to Mordecai. Why is it that Haman is in the court of the king? I want Mordecai to be hanged. And the king sends for Haman to come in and ask him what would be a good thing to do to somebody I want to honor. And he lays this all out in all of its royal attire. And the king's told Haman, go get Mordecai and do that for him. In verse 11, then took Haman the apparel and the horse and arrayed Mordecai and caused him to ride through the street of the city and proclaimed before him, how'd you like to be Haman? Thus shall it be done unto the man whom the king delighteth to honor. And old wicked Haman has to do that to Mordecai. It says, and Mordecai came again to the king's gate. But Haman hasted to his house, mourning and having his head covered. You talk about running off with his tail tucked between his legs. And shame. Because now the great honor that he thought was going to be his, he's had to bestow it upon his enemy. In verse 13, Haman recounted unto Zeresh, his wife, and all his friends, everything that had befallen him. Then said his wise men to Zeresh, his wife, unto him, and Zeresh, his wife, Mordecai, before whom thou hast begun to fall, be of the seed of the Jews. Thou shalt not prevail against him, but shall surely fall before him. Well, what's about to take place? The downfall of Haman is just about to occur. Now it's time for this second banquet. Haman and the king come before Esther the queen. And the king again says in verse 2, what is thy petition, Queen Esther? And it shall be granted thee. What is thy request? Even to half the kingdom. It shall be performed. Now what's Esther's request? In verse 4. No, verse 3. It says, then Esther the queen answered and said, if I have found favor in thy sight, O king, and if it please the king, let my life be given me at my petition, and my people at my request. For we are sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be slain, and to perish. But if we had been sold for bondmen or bondwomen, I'd held my peace. Although the adversary could not have compensated for the king's damage. Then spake the king, Ahasuerus, and said unto Esther the queen, who is he? And where is he that doth presume in his heart to do so? And do you see her request? Somebody has ordered that all of the Jews be killed. That includes me. Now, if somebody had set forth a decree, or you had decided, signed a decree, that we become bondservants, then I would have kept my mouth shut. But because this decree is that we shall all be slain, then I petition the king for my life and the life of my people. Now the king wants to know, who is the rascal that's doing this? Well, who is it that's at her banquet? The king and Haman. And she points the finger at Haman. In verse 6, and Esther said, an adversary and an enemy even this wicked Haman, then Haman was afraid before the queen or king and the queen. Wouldn't you be? You see, he's just messed up big time. He's gotten the king to sign an order that all the Jews be killed. And now the king knows that that would include his queen. Now what do we do? Well, the king arose and went out into the palace garden. No doubt the king was upset, to say the least. But if you'll note in verse 7, the latter part of it, it tells us that Haman stood up to make request for his life to Esther, the queen. For he saw that there was evil determined against him by the king. Now, the position that Haman places himself in is bad, as we see in the very next verse. When the king comes back from the garden, what does he see? He sees Haman fallen upon the couch whereon Esther was. Now, no doubt that would be distressing to the king. Here's a man, though he be your right-hand man, your prime minister. Not only has he done wrong, but now here he is on the couch where the queen is. And the text tells us, the king said, will he even force the queen before me in the house? As the word went out of the king's mouth, they covered Haman's face, and Habana, one of the chamberlains that were before the king, behold also the gallows, 50 cubits high, which Haman hath made for Mordecai, who spake good for the king, standeth in the house of Haman. Now, that's fascinating. Because who does Haman think is going to die? Mordecai. And he's built the gallows for Mordecai in his own backyard, if you please. And now word comes to the king. Haman has a gallows that's 50 cubits high. And the king says, you take him back there in his own backyard and hang him. Now, we said, what a turn of events. Indeed. Old Haman gets the very thing that he thought he was going to get for Mordecai. Now, in verse 1 of chapter 8, it says, on that day did the king, Ahasuerus, give the house of Haman, the Jews' enemy, unto Esther, the queen. Underscore that. Everything that Haman had now belongs to Esther, a Jew. Now we might think, as you read further in verse 1, as Mordecai is promoted, that everything is good. But we still have this decree that's set in place that all the Jews on an appointed day, all of them are to be killed. And it cannot be changed. Now what do we do? In verse 3, Esther spake yet again before the king and fell down at his feet and besought him with tears to put away the mischief of Haman the Agagite and his device that he had devised against the Jews. Then the king held out to Esther the golden scepter. Now keep in mind that Esther has again approached the king. And the king has given her permission. It says, so Esther rose and stood before the king, and she said, if it please the king, and if I found favor in his sight, and the thing seem right before the king, and I be pleasing in his eyes, let it be written to reverse the letters devised by Haman, that all the Jews be destroyed that are in the king's provinces. Now, how can that be done? In verse 8, it says, write ye also to the Jews, as it pleaseth you in the king's name, and seal it with the king's ring, for the writing which is written in the king's name, and seal it with the king's ring, may no man reverse. Can't be changed. But what are we going to do? Well, those of you who know the story know that God provides. The king writes another decree. And the second decree that the king writes is that on this appointed day, when the Persians are authorized to slay all the Jews are now authorized to defend themselves. Now, the thing that's a bit of irony about that, now instead of the Jews weeping and wailing about what's to come to pass, it's the Persians that were intent on killing them that no doubt have heard about the Jews. And it tells us in verse 17, and many from among the peoples of the land became Jews, for the fear of the Jews was fallen upon them. Now, how this is all going to take place, that the Jews are spared. We know that the battle begins. Haman's 10 sons are hung on the gallows that Haman himself has built. When the Jews are through, in verse 16, we note that 75,000 of the Persians have been killed. And in verse 17, it's declared a day of feast, a day of joy, because the Jews have been spared. Now, the day following what was intended to be a great slaughter of the Jews is now declared a holiday. In verse 21, to enjoin upon them that they should keep the 14th day of the month Adar and the 15th day of the same yearly as the days wherein the Jews had rest from their enemies and the month which was turned unto them from sorrow to gladness and from mourning into a good day. So now the day following and the next day become celebrated days in their history because they have been spared. Now you'll note that the days were called Purim there in verse 26 as they continue to celebrate this as a great day. Now, lots of questions arise. One thing I want to note just farther, though, is in chapter 10, in verse 3, it says, "For Mordecai the Jew was next to King Ahasuerus, and great among the Jews, and accepted of the multitude of his brethren, seeking the good of his people, and speaking peace to all his seed." The position that Haman had had now is given to Mordecai. And Mordecai is second in command of all of the Persians. Now the questions. We know that Esther was an orphan. What if some other family member had taken her in, not Mordecai? Would the outcome have been different? Well, you might suppose that it might have been different. If her home had been among some of her other relatives, what if Esther had revealed her identity to the king before Mordecai told her to? What if she had not kept that a secret? Well, things might have been altogether different. How did it happen then that Mordecai sent out the decree that averted the effects of Haman's decree? What if it had been somebody else? Well, things might have been different. What if Haman had not come on the very day that the king had had a restless night and read the Chronicles? What if he come a little earlier in the day? Then Mordecai might have been slain. But he came at the time that the king was desiring to honor Mordecai for the great things that he had read that Mordecai did. How did it happen that Mordecai came to be this man of wisdom and intelligence involved in this plan? That's an interesting question. Mordecai has this planned out and makes suggestions to Esther regarding the resolution of this. How did Mordecai happen to even be alive at this time? How come the king had trouble sleeping? Why did he ask for the Chronicles? How did the king happen to hear about Mordecai saving his life? How did it happen that until now this good deed had been overlooked? What if Mordecai had been awarded earlier? And how did a young Jewish orphan become a queen over a world empire? Now that's all interesting to me. I don't know the answers to all those questions. You don't either. They're simply not given. But Esther is the only book in the Bible that doesn't name God. But yet you see God on every page, don't you? Preserving His people
to fulfill the promise that he had made to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that through thy seed all families of the earth shall be blessed. Now Mordecai believed what God said. Now if you don't go before the king, God will find some way to spare his people. And who knows whether or not you're come to this place for this time, for this occasion. Again, Ecclesiastes 9. For all this is laid to my heart, even to explore all this, that the righteous and the wise and their works are in the hand of God. Do you see that all the way through this portion of Old Testament history when you study about Esther? Do you see now why Miss Florence was sitting on the edge of her seat saying, and then what happened? Yes. Then what happened? God provided, didn't he? And Mordecai knew that. Now it's difficult for us, I'm sure, to point our finger at a certain incident and say, in our lives, this is an illustration of the providence of God. No, you don't know that. But you do know that God provides, don't you? You do know that His will is at work. And you do know that He responds to prayer. And you do have confidence that God will do what He chooses to do. Now, as we look at that, I want us to be impressed with that, because the point is really simple. You see, when Christ came to the Jews, Mordecai thought that Esther's elevation very well may have been for that very purpose. The 3 days of fasting before Esther went into the king's presence, some speculate on what that was for. Don't know. But what we do know is God took care of His people. And I'm persuaded that God takes care of His people today. I don't know all the ins and the outs of that. But I know we're instructed to pray for a number of things, and we've already studied that. Now, when you pray, do you have confidence that God's will be done in all things? Indeed. You've listened patiently to our study. Hopefully something has been said, or you've seen something that's edifying. Increase your faith to know that indeed there is a God and you can believe Him. You're not a Christian. It's your desire to obey the gospel this evening. Everything's ready. We'd be happy to baptize you into Christ. If you've obeyed the gospel and you're not doing the things you know you should, you can correct those things this evening. Call upon these brethren to pray with you and for you that you might be right. If you be subject to the invitation, make that known. All together we stand while we sing this song.